Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
I can't even begin to count up the number of calls that we've had relation to corporal punishment this week. They just seem to keep on coming in. Anne, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. Very well, thank you.
You saw people being punished when you were a pupil, and it ended up informing the kind of teacher you became.
Yes. I did. I saw humiliation, I saw physical, emotional, psychological abuse. I witnessed it and experienced the level of it.
And how did it inform you then when you went on to teacher training college? Because I assume that you did your training at a time when corporal punishment was still policy.
Well, Philip, I didn't train as a primary teacher. I worked in the secondary sector. I knew, even as a 10-year-old, I knew there was something very wrong about it, and I saw the injustice of it, and I really phoned yesterday because I think we cannot be allowed to silence the witness, the testament of those men who were with you yesterday. It would be a double injustice.
And do you think there are those who would have them silenced?
Well, I felt that the last caller yesterday, a member of my own profession, was suggesting that this was an anti-teacher rant, or it was trying to stake out teachers in some kind of way. I don't accept that at all. These men were giving a true witness of what they experienced. And as a teacher, I wouldn't like to see it characterised as an anti-teacher campaign.
And when corporal punishment was outlawed, were you actually teaching in a secondary school at that stage, yeah?
Yes.
But I take it that it wasn't being used in that school.
No. I never was aware of it being used.
But talk to me, were you aware more generally of the attitude of teachers towards this change of policy at that stage? Were there people saying, how on earth are we going to be expected to keep any kind of control in the classroom now?
I would have heard that, Philip, but it would have been from people who in some way had deficiencies about keeping students interested and stimulated. Most of the people that I worked with and socialised with in the profession wouldn't have been appalled. But I have to say that a number of years later, my two sons were in a school where it was still going on, despite the legislation. It was still going on. Now, they didn't seem to have encountered it that often, but they subsequently told stories, as boys tend not to tell you these things, but in later years they did recount incidents of brutality. And
you must have been horrified.
I was, but I did know that it depended often on the ethos of the school.
Indeed. John, good afternoon, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Not too
John,
bad.
John,
but
you...
I do not have, Philip, I do not have the confidence or the intelligence to articulate myself now as your previous caller there. She expressed things very well.
That's absolute nonsense, John. Have you just listened to what you've said to me there in the first 10 seconds of this call? You're expressing yourself perfectly. You wrote a letter to a teacher who punished you.
That was my way of coping with the feelings, that the inner feelings and the inner hurt. I wrote a letter, but I did not mail the letter to the individual.
Did you write the letter while you were still in school being punished and this was going on, or was it many years later?
No, I only wrote the letter just a few years back. And I'm in the, as the fellow would say, the winter of my life now, Philip.
And what did you say in the letter, John?
Well, it's a long enough letter, it would take about 4 minutes or whatever.
Please, we have the time.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I won't mention the clergyman's name, okay?
No, don't do that. But
no.
Read us the rest
of
it.
I will not mention the school. But it's, Dear Father X, during a recent visit to Cork, I met a schoolmate whom I had not seen for over 35 years. While standing on the steps outside the Imperial Hotel, we both looked back over our lives and sang praises of various classmates and teachers, some of whom we shall never again meet at a human. human level, as they are with their God. The reminiscing referred to school days in the vocational school, a 10-minute journey down memory lane. Positive feelings were very much experienced, and our parting shot was, we must get together again. Whilst driving home, the positive feelings were interrupted by negative ones when earlier school days returned once again to haunt me. Days in the secondary school, late 1950s. My most fear-ridden and humiliating experiences happened during that period. I have vivid memories of the teacher ordering me to stand up and recite a verse of Unspalpin Fánach. I obeyed, but after the first two lines, maybe I hadn't even arrived in Cashel, the teacher, equipped with leather strap, stood over me and yelled, "A mock os ord." I felt he was going to make an example of me. I was 12 years. All eyes were on me, and I wanted to scream, cry, or die. However, I started again. "Good Joe, Joe Arish." A mock os ord interrupted my feeble efforts. He had me, and he knew it. I lived at home with my father, who was smitten with illness for many years, and whom I had to care for whilst my mother worked outside the home each evening and some afternoons. I also endured other terrible hardships, unspeakable at that time, which I do not wish to commit to paper. "A mock os ord," the teacher shouted, whilst the leather strap made contact on the back of my neck. The teacher, who had been standing beside me, marched to the front of the classroom, leaving me with feelings of terrible fear and physical hurt. In actual fact, I learned the poem under extremely difficult circumstances, as I did not understand what I was learning. And when ordered to recite same, I had no idea of what a mock os ord meant. Circumstances did not allow me to share my school problems with the folks at home. I have memories of being labelled a failure when the same teacher wrote to my mother, Oscailge, suggesting that I should not remain in the secondary school. Thus, I was enrolled in the vocational school. Unfortunately, I did not learn anything about love from my secondary school days. Fear and failure, yes. I do not wish to indulge in self-pity, but I feel that as an adult, the teacher should have tried to understand and encourage, and make it his business to find out why this 12-year-old offspring of intelligent parents failed to reach his true potential in the classroom. Father, I confess you were one of the few people I hated when I was a vulnerable child. Painfully, I can remember times when my anger and hatred nearly consumed me. The feelings of hatred, which I have carried and entertained into adulthood, leave me with a sense of guilt, especially when trying to recite the Lord's Prayer with meaning. Please, try to understand how difficult it is for me to communicate the above. I fully appreciate that it may be difficult for you too to read and digest. Hopefully, by sharing the above, it may be possible to develop positive feelings towards you. Perhaps we were both victims of that particular blossomed well in your priestly duties. In an extraordinary way, you have taught me the power of forgiveness. May the good Lord always keep you in the palm of his hand. Slán agus beannacht. That's it, Philip.
Why did you never send it?
I beg your pardon?
Why did you never send it?
I had a reason that I did not send it. I feared that the man could get a heart attack when he'd read it, and I wouldn't want to be responsible for killing him or being responsible for hurting another individual as I have been hurt myself.
It's awful. I mean, like you say, you learned forgiveness, but you also learned fear and failure at this man's hands. Which is the more abiding now?
Well, now, tis the I have, yes, I better not go into how I'm feeling just now, but that was my way of dealing with the situation. You know, I have, and I am not alone in my loneliness. And I'm sure we've heard that expression before. But it was a wicked way to treat children. And I can empathize fully with the people who telephoned your line yesterday. So that's all I have to offer, Philip. I have no experience, and this is my first time ever speaking on the airwaves.
Well, it was very eloquently done as well, and I hope that sharing it has in some way been a therapeutic exercise for you too, John, given that you never got to share it with the person who was tormenting you. And you know what? You're not alone. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Does what you're hearing John read there resonate with you too?
It certainly does, and it resonates with me in a special way, because I wrote a book in 2007 called Why I Called My Sister Harry. I got a severe beating from a nun at the age of 4, and it had such an emotional impact on me that I didn't speak for 3 months, and when I started to speak again, I had a severe stutter or stammer, which is very common in Ireland. And when I done the research for the book, I spoke to over 600 people trying to find out what was the trigger for their own stammering or their own challenge with stammering. And I found out that over 80% would have had similar experiences, had a similar age group of being in the education system from, we'll say, 1955 through to 1970.
80% of 600 people.
80% of 600 people who are challenged by stammering now.
Now, they weren't necessarily saying that it was the Christian Brothers or the nuns what caused my stammering, but that it contributed, it didn't
it
help.
It contributed, that's because they were challenged by stammering, they were picked on in school, they were bullied, all of that, they were skipped over, it had a grave impact on them. Because remember that the art of stammering is covering up and holding back. And in my own instance, when I got beaten by a nun, it was compounded 3 years later when I changed school, that one day the teacher that I had was out sick and I ended up in the principal's class. And he asked me a question, and it was a damp, miserable, I remember it so clearly, it was a damp, miserable day in November. He had an old school, high windows, limestone walls, and he asked me a question and I couldn't answer it. And he shouted at me to spit it out, and if my life depended on it, I couldn't spit it out. And he lost his temper, and his way of punishment was, he used to have a 1 meter stick with a brass ferrule on the end of it, and if he really wanted to punish you, he turned the stick on its edge and he hit me across the fleshy part of my palm, and he threw blood. And of course, in 1962, that was very, very common in the school that I went to. Now, I'm not saying that every teacher in that school was the same, but this man, he got pleasure out of it every day.
And Do you recognise people now who have been through the same experience as you, who have suffered in the same way, without them necessarily having to tell you their story?
Of course I do, because I work very closely with the stammering community in Ireland. And not only that, I heard your interviews yesterday, and I heard people saying about going to the toilet and the beds and their pants in school and all of that. Like, I experienced all that, and I experienced it through one word, and that was terror. I was terrified.
The reason I ask it is that because I was on Saturday last, I was at a screening of a film about Christina Noble and her family and how her family were pulled apart by the church and by the state and the consequences of being separated in their early childhood and taken away from each other and the lasting impact that that has had on them for 50 years. And as I was standing there after the film, having a chat with her brother, Sean, lovely man, this other gentleman came up to us, very well-dressed, very well-spoken, outwardly nothing exceptional about him whatsoever. And Sean turned to him straight away and said, I can see you, just by the look of you, have the same kind of story to tell as I do. And the hairs stood up on the back of my neck because to me he looked no different to any other member of the population. But Sean identified him straight away as somebody who had been abused, humiliated, traduced, betrayed by the church and by the state, just by the way he caught his eye and by the way he looked at him.
Yeah. But what we have to realise is the impact that that had throughout the person's life. Like, the 600 people that I interviewed, the impact that the challenge of stammering, their experience in school, that had on them throughout their life was enormous. Now, as I said, I'm not saying that everybody in my school, every teacher in my school, I had some excellent teachers, but those two people were principals. Those were the ones that should have led by example, and they were never pulled up. And that man, he was only found out because of something else that I don't want to go into now. But in fairness to the parish priest of that time, he was the one who brought him to answer the questions. But all that I'm saying is that people that I know throughout Ireland who are challenged by stammering would have very, very bad experiences of both primary and secondary school. And the challenge of stammering is bad enough without going through that.
Indeed, indeed, and everything else. And as you say there, there were priests who were good, there were nuns who were good. And Barry, good afternoon, how are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. How are you?
In your experience, it was the lay teachers who were the worst, not the brothers.
Well, that's true. When I was in primary school, the brothers used to give you your smack and your teacher got your smack, and it was nothing that the kids... It was normal for it. But when I went into secondary school, when I was about 12 years of age, just 11 turning 12, I went into first year, and lay teacher there used to teach English and Latin, and it was very upmarket. And I came from a fairly humble background, and he said he was going down the classroom asking the names of the pupils, and of course there was the great O'Connor clan and all this, and my surname came up, and he said, oh, the only man I know your name, he says, was a murderer.
He didn't.
He did, yeah. A murderer.
On your first day in a new school?
On my first day in a new school, and at that time there was about 40 students in the class. And, of course, being kids, it was funny for a little while, you know what I'm saying? And I was very upset
over it. Of course, but you were singled out, you were marked out from the moment you were down there.
I was singled out, yeah. And then as the year went on, I found he had a personal dislike to me. And anything he'd be saying to me, like he'd bring up, like that, I feel very sorry for John there, when John brought up to the top of the class to read your poetry, and he'd sit on a chair, he'd have a ruler, and if you stumbled at all saying your poetry, he'd slap you in the back of the legs. But eventually, anyway, I'll cut a long story short, I was so terrified of this man. I was afraid of my life of him. And I started to mitch from school.
Of course.
So, of course, mitching from school, the school at the time, it was a very good school, and they informed my parents, who sent out a letter, your child is not at school. My mum said to me, how's things at school today? I said, fine. So I got up the following morning. We used to go to school on Saturday morning, and I was walking, like, avoiding school, and my mother came behind me. She said, where are you going? I said, I've got a message for the teacher. So she said, well, I've got a message for the teacher as well. So she brought me into Kevin Street Garda Station and said, this boy won't go to school, he's mitching. So, like, just to frighten me to, you know, because she didn't know the circumstances. So the guard came out, he said, well, I want to know why this boy is not going to school. So I explained, I broke down, and I told him that I was terrified of this teacher. So my mother said,
"There's an enlightened guard now. Didn't he do you a favour?"
Oh, fantastic. There was two of them, actually. So eventually, anyway, they said, my mother said, "You'll go to school on Monday." "No, he won't. He'll go to school today." So the two guards put me in the guard's car, drove me to the school with my mother, and demanded to see this teacher.
Good Lord.
And he confronted him and told him that he should be educating me, not terrorising me. And
What year was this, Barry?
This would have been about 1957. I'm 70 now. And
that was very much the exception to the rule of the behaviour of anybody in an authority position.
Oh, yes. Well, this man, he was well known. We're not going to names, but I'm sure if there's anybody in my class, my classmates were absolutely wonderful. They were the guys in the class were brilliant, every single one of them. But however, he was confronted anyway, and I went in on the Monday, and for 3 years, I was ignored by the lay teachers.
Uh-huh.
The brothers gave me my education. There was actually one lay teacher that was really, he was an elderly man, and he was very, very considerate. But all the teachers, they never bothered correcting my homework. I was just totally, just put on the outside. And it was actually the Christian Brothers. I played football and hurling, and that sort of went down well at that time with the Christian Brothers. So that they actually got me through my education.
But still, isn't it awful that the best that you could hope for was to be neglected by your teacher and overlooked and ignored?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's actually, you know, as I say, and the brothers were most kind because they obviously knew. But this was a gang up. There was about five lay teachers in the secondary school at the time, and none of them they just weren't interested in me, you know. But that man actually, I'm looking back, listening to the things yesterday, that's what brought me on the phone today. Like, in this day and age, with kids being bullied and everything else, like, I've stood out in the rain and fields, and I hid because you couldn't be seen walking around with a school bag. I used to hide in places that you wouldn't go to, you know, any laneways and everything, and it'd be lashing rain and everything. You'd be hiding till it was 4 o'clock. I was a child. I didn't know what to do. There were some kids that were more intelligent, probably said, "Listen, we go to the pictures or something like that." But I hadn't got that money or anything like that. But I was terrified of this man. He really terrified me. And but my mother did the right thing, thinking she was correcting me, but she actually, at the end of the day, she corrected the teacher.
And the two guards as well. All right.
Yeah,
Barry.
Yeah. They were fantastic.
Thank you very much for your call. Take care of yourself.
Okay, thanks very much, Philip.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
It doesn't happen to everybody, but there are very many who are fortunate enough to have encountered that one teacher who inspires you. And Margaret, in your case, it was a nun.
Yes, Philip, how are you? I started school actually in Sligo with the Mercy Sisters in 1962, and it wasn't until probably 1968 until I encountered this sister, Sister Madeline. And I often wondered about her, you know, where she is now, and I would love to meet her and thank her. I don't know if that was her real name, you know, I'm sure she had another name. But after years of being very fearful going to school and being very timid and just frightened, really, of the sisters who taught me before that, particularly in junior infants. It was called low babies back then. And
what a term. But sorry, was it just that she was good compared to the other sisters, or that she was an exceptional person?
No, she was particularly good. You know, I'm not saying, I don't want to badmouth any of the sisters who taught at that time. You know, they were very dedicated sisters, very dedicated nuns. But the one, you know, I did have in the early school life was, you know, to say the least, a bit of a tyrant. I think she would have been better off maybe running the country rather than teaching baby infants, you know.
Or maybe not. But why? What did she put you through?
Well, I was a left-hander, and I can remember being up at the blackboard, and I was very tiny back then. I still am very small. And I was, you know...
You were forced to conform and use your right hand, were you?
Well, eventually I had to be switched over to right-handed writing because I just couldn't... For anybody who's left-handed, they would understand this, you know. The teacher shows you how to make a number two and goes out to the right with the right hand. So this is how we make a number two. So being a little kid of five, I went out with my left hand, which meant I did a perfect mirror image of a number
two. Back to front, absolutely, yeah.
So I couldn't grasp it, that I had to go against that, you know. So I was murdered, really, for just not getting that.
And you were made to write with your right hand. Do you write with your right or your left now?
I write with my right hand now. But
really?
I don't write very well with my right hand.
Okay, anyway, back to Sister Madeleine. What stood out about it?
So, Sister Madeleine was just, first of all, she was a beautiful looking woman. She was probably only in her 20s at that time, but it was difficult to tell what age she was. She just nurtured every single child in the class. I think it was fifth class, actually. And she nurtured music and drama and all the arts. And she was just very understanding and very, just almost like a mother, really, to all of the children, you know.
And pointedly very different to the other nuns that were there, yeah?
Yes, I think so, yeah. She just seemed to, she knew, she got a lot more out of the children by being, you know, firm but very fair in her dealings with everybody. And I can remember her making a set for a play we did, Chirna Nog. She made the whole set for that play and brought it to the All-Ireland. We were All-Ireland winners, actually, that year. And it's just, yeah, I have a lot of really, really good memories of her. And I think my education really started at that point.
It's interesting, though, because it's a question that came up yesterday. It's a question I can see coming up with other callers who want to get in here is, were there not teachers at that time who allowed themselves to be guided by their moral compass and not what the policy said that they should be doing and hitting children and educating them through negative reinforcement and not copying what every other teacher did? Obviously, Sister Madeleine, in your case, was one of those people who said,
I think there is another way. And I've often wondered, did she remain as a mercy nun, you know? Because her treatment and her culture of teaching was so different from what went earlier. Now, I mean, from baby infants up to fifth class, I must have had some nuns who were okay, you know, because I don't remember them as being particularly bad. But
when you were in low babies, as you said, it wasn't the best of times. Let me bring in Geraldine here. Geraldine, because on that question of the moral compass, you had a teacher who was awful to you, but then obviously had misgivings about what they had done later on.
Yes, I had a terrible time once. I've just been constantly remember being hit with two rulers put together and being hit on the knuckles. And then one particular day, this teacher just was exasperated probably with me. I don't know, but she hit me across the face. And it was just pretty horrendous. And I spoke to my parents about it. And a friend of theirs spoke to the school about it. And the following day, the headmaster came in with a policeman dressed in uniform and said, "Stand up here, anybody who saw this girl being slapped across the face."
The guardie said that?
Yes, the headmaster said it, with the policeman. The policeman came in with them, with the headmaster. The headmaster said, "Stand up here, anybody who saw Geraldine being hit across the face." Well, of course, nobody stood up.
Of course not.
Absolutely. Everybody was absolutely terrified. I can still remember to this day being brought out through a kind of a courtyard type into another part of the school and then being brought up into this bathroom. And, my God, when I think of it now, this policeman and the headmaster, and the headmaster kept saying, "You'll have to stop lying. You've just got to stop lying about this." And I said, "Well, I know I was definitely slapped across the face." And he said, "Well, show me how you were slapped." Well, can you imagine? I was just standing there. I was absolutely terrified. I said, "What do you mean, show you?" So I put my hand up, literally up to his face, and he said, "Don't be ridiculous. That's not a slap across the face."
Oh, that's just stupid. So the guard never made any effort to talk to you, not in the company of a teacher or the headmaster?
No, not at all. I was constantly with the two of them.
Oh, for God's sake.
I'm actually shaking now as I'm telling you. It was really, really a horrible, horrible feeling. But going back to the classroom and everybody looking at me and sort of, they were, I knew, and I said to my best friend at the time, I can't remember her surname, but I remember her name was Susan, and I said, my goodness, you know, why didn't she say I was, you know, she was just terrified. But,
Idiotic teaching and idiotic policing as well. Complete contrast to the other story that we just heard a few minutes ago,
yes,
about the two teachers or the two policemen who went and tackled the abusive teacher. But tell me, what was it then that suggested to you that your teacher had had a bit of a change of heart about what he had done?
Well,
or she
I
had
was
done,
outside, and I was outside playing camogie in the field one evening, and the teacher came out and said, I couldn't believe it, they were coming up in the field, and I thought, my God, I'm going to be hit again now, and for doing something wrong. This is what affected me all my life. I kept thinking, my God, I'm doing something wrong here, you know. And they just came up and said, really very sorry, Geraldine, I made a terrible mistake. I've done you a dreadful disservice, and I hope everything will go well for you. And I just thought, wow. Now, I just thought that was an amazing thing for them to do at that. And looking back on it now, I thought it was absolutely amazing thing for them to do. It took great courage for them to do that.
Well, it did. It just goes to show you, good people can do bad things. Bad people can occasionally do good things.
But I just think what happened in those days is absolutely horrendous, and I think people should talk about it because I think it gets a bit off your chest. You know,
Margaret, did you wanted to come back in there, Margaret?
Yes, I just feel, you know, anyone who has an inclination towards teaching, you know, I think, you know, they should really think about whether they like children first and foremost, and because a teacher next to the parents will have a huge influence on a child, you know, and a good teacher can change a child's life, can change an outcome for an adult actually, and I think, you know, a good teacher will never be forgotten by a pupil.
And neither, from everything that we've heard in the last couple of days, will a bad or an abusive or an evil
and
teacher.
That's exactly
either.
It. Yeah, the opposite is true also.
Okay. Okay, ladies, Margaret, Geraldine, thank you very much. Unfortunately, I have to do this.
Thanks.
Charlie, much the same as a number of other people who've called today, you developed a stammer as a result of your time with the Christian Brothers.
Oh, I did, Philip, here in Cork. I did indeed. I got an almighty stammer. I couldn't go into a shop for my mother for a pint of milk or a loaf of bread. In the local shop. I couldn't. I used to serve mass in a local convent. And the nuns had to take over answering the priest. I couldn't put two words in front of myself. I just could not talk.
And there had been no hint of a stammer before you went to school?
No.
Before
never.
They got their hands on
and
you?
And I went to school, and this particular brother used to make me recite the Glorious Mysteries. And like when you start off the Glorious Mysteries, you say, the Annunciation, and then it changes to the Visitation. You understand what I'm saying?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It was the and the.
Uh-huh.
And he used to roar around the classroom with his stick, make me say it again and again and again. And of course, the more he roared and the more he became sadistic, the worse I got.
How come you can call Liveline and speak to an audience of hundreds of thousands today without even the slightest hint of a stammer?
I can stand up, and I'm pretty well known in this area, and I can stand up and have stood up in front of 700 and 800 people and given presentations, both slides and audio, and without as much as a single stammer. The stammer left me the minute I came out of school.
What?
The minute I left school. The stammer left. And of course, one of the problems with this particular brother was that I was not sport orientated. And with the Christian Brothers, if you were into sport, you were the bee's knees.
Mm.
But if you weren't interested in GAA, my God, they had no time for you.
But are you telling me the day after you left school, that was it? You were speaking without a stammer?
That was it. I never stammered a day since.
Charlie, that just tells its own tale, doesn't it? Thank you very much for your call.
Philip.
Take care.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much to everybody else today, Geraldine, Anne, Margaret, and so on. Today's programme was produced by Emma Laffin. Research was by Alistair MacDonald. Back again tomorrow at the same time. Enjoy your afternoon. Thanks very much for listening. Derek's up next.